is Tennessee Talks with United States Congressman Tim Burchett.
Hello, I'm Congressman Tim Burchett. Welcome back to another episode of Tennessee Talks. Today I'm joined by a very good friend of mine, Eli Crane from Arizona's 2nd Congressional District. Welcome, Eli.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you being here, brother. You were born in Tucson, Arizona.
Yep.
Never been to Arizona. Never been there.
Really?
Need to get out there. He's co-founder of Bottle Breacher, a company specialized in handcrafted bottle openers made from 50 caliber ammunition, which is kind of cool. We used to go to Myrtle Beach when I was a kid at Apache Campground, and during the Second World War, it was a strafing range.
Really?
And we would dig up 50 caliber slugs and shell casings all the time.
That's were they still intact or were they pretty deformed?
No, most of them were intact. And the only time they would be deformed was if they hit another bullet in the sand, which is kind of cool. And
cool.
You found very few of the actual, of the bullet casing. What would you call that?
The shell.
Yeah. It was always the other, and sometimes you'd find a shell casing that had been shot up. I mean, I guess they just repeatedly, because you could just, it was unbelievable. We'd get out there a metal detector and just dig. And man, you'd just find it. We brought home literally a bushel basket of those every year. And it's kind of our thing. People bring home shells from the beach. Ours were just a little different shells. But my dad was pretty cool. He's an old World War II guy, so that was kind of cool for him. Let's get back into you. But a week after the attacks on the Twin Towers on September 11th, Representative Crane, Eli, you left the University of Arizona and enlisted in the U.S. Navy. What were you doing when you heard that they'd hit those towers? Where were you?
I just got done with a preparatory program called the Ranger Challenge Program, and it was preparing me to go into special operations and of some type.
Wow.
And it was an early morning workout, got in my car, started it up, and I always had talk radio on, and so I heard, you know, that they were talking about the planes flying into the tower. So I drove home, lived in a house with a bunch of other guys. I woke everybody up and I was like, you guys got to listen to this. And
yeah,
we just sat there and listened to it.
I'm going to war. Yeah, I was in Nashville. I'll never forget it. I was watching the second one live, actually. We were, you know, watching all the news broadcasts. You after that, though, you enlisted in the U.S. Navy, and you served in the military for 13 years.
Yep.
And I was a part of 5 deployments, serving 3 of those with SEAL Team 3.
Yep.
And this is your first term in Congress. You've already done a lot of things for your constituents. I've been there with you. You've made some tough decisions that have been good for the country. A lot of the Unit Party don't like it, but they don't like me either, so we're even.
That's right.
It's a pleasure having you here with us today, Eli. I'm going to get the first question. Before, you know, you joined Congress, but before that, you know, you served in the Navy as a SEAL. What was that journey like for you? What was it? You know, you watch the videos, you just can't, I couldn't imagine the intensity of it. But what was that in your mind?
You know, it was just an opportunity to serve, but I think in every young man, we all have this big question, do I have what it takes? And, you know, I wanted to answer my question with, you know, the hardest military training in the Department of Defense. It was just something that always appealed to me. And, you know, my dad gave me some advice when I was in high school, Tim. He said, Eli, the trick to being happy in your career is to pick something you would do for free. And I started reading a bunch of military books, a bunch of special operations books. And I was like, you know, jumping out of planes, diving, shooting stuff, blowing stuff up, going after bad guys, working in a small, you know, unit would be pretty cool. I'd probably do that for free.
Yeah.
I didn't know at the time I hated jumping out of planes, but I found that out later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was that's what it was all about. And fortunately, it took me 2 times to make it through. But hey, you know, resiliency, it's important. And, you know, some of us need a couple tries.
Well, 13 years, I guess that you were in the right place. You were doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
after your career as a SEAL and a business owner, what made you want to come to Congress?
Just watching how screwed up the country was and feeling like it wasn't a lack of experience or intelligence. There's, as you know, Tim, there's so many intelligent people up here. There's so many people with amazing stories, but I just see very few of them actually have the courage, the moral courage to do the right thing and to go against the grain.
So I
knew that was a skill that I had, and I believe that if God blessed me with, you know, the ability to come up here, that, you know, I'd be able to align myself with other like-minded people and maybe start being a part of turning this country back in the right direction.
I always remember my dad right before he died. I was mayor of Knox County, and I was always into it with somebody for something, and I was getting blasted in the paper and the editorial or something. I walked in there and daddy had his massive stroke down there at the Ben Ashley Veterans Center, and you know, he wasn't long where he was going to be meeting the Lord face to face. And he said, he grunted out, he said, "They still after you? Or are they after you again?" And I said, "Yeah, Daddy, they are." And he said, I remember he grunted out. And people couldn't understand what he said, but for me and Mama, we could understand exactly what he said. The nurse was like, "What did he say?" And he said, "Do you really want that bunch for you?" And I thought, man, that's pretty profound, actually. I'm going to remember that one. And I have, because when that bunch, the Uniparty and all them are for you, you're usually doing something wrong. More than usual, you are doing something wrong.
That's right.
Now let's talk a little bit about the Uniparty. I use that term a lot. I'm sure you do too. But I wonder to you, what does it really mean to you, and how do you think it affects the way that things get done or not get done, as the case may be in Washington?
Yeah, I think it's... it stems from a desire for representatives to be a part of the team or a part of the club. And, you know, this place is very, it's very influential. It's, you know, there's so much power up here. There's so much money up here. I saw the effects of it as soon as I got elected, as far as people trying to suck me into the machine. And the Uniparty only seems to have two moves. They either co-opt you, or they try and get rid of you. And, as somebody who came from a team environment, somebody who started a small business and understands that you can't do anything on your own, like, I understand why people come here and they want to be on the team. The problem is, as you know, Tim, the team up here doesn't represent the American people.
No, they don't.
And so exactly. It's like, the way I saw it is, if I was going to come up here, I was going to represent the team back home, Team America. And I knew that this place would hate me and try and spit me out. And I welcome the challenge. If they're able to do it, then, you know, so be it. But my kids, your kids, future generations deserve, you know, they deserve a shot, and they deserve some of the freedom that you and I grew up with. And right now, that's an impossibility with the people up here.
Yeah, $35 trillion in debt. We just keep, it's not...
Yeah,
there's no difference between us and them.
No, there isn't.
And it scares me. It's important we elect folks like yourself that are called America First conservatives. How important is it that we elect more? I mean, we talk about the debt, we talk about our influence overseas, and to me, I think it's imperative that, and we're, you know, we can just hold the line and get more people in here that think like we do. And I think that's got to be the key to part of this, because I don't see us converting anybody.
No, I don't either. And I think, to your question, how important is it? It goes back to that question of future. You know, it's like the trajectory we're on is not sustainable. I don't think most Americans really pay attention, because they're so busy and they get so pissed off and frustrated with politics and politicians that they don't pay attention. The problem is, though, is that when they check out like that and they don't pay attention, that vacuum is filled with the Uniparty, the corruption,
yep,
the special interests, the swamp. And Americans think, oh, well, it's the United States of America, we have it so good here, that's never going to change. But the problem is, like, if you look at these trajectories and these trends that you and I look at every single day, we know it's not sustainable. And
sure.
So if the American people want you know, to continue to enjoy what we've got to enjoy and be blessed like we are. They've got to pay attention, and they've got to actually watch what their representative does with his voting card or her voting card, and then what they say when they come back home. And they've got to send people up here that are willing to go against the grain and take that hard vote and be hated up here.
Yeah, well, every 2 years, we ought to be able to keep, especially with computers and being able to track what people are doing. I think it's a whole lot easier.
But it's getting a lot easier for people to pay attention.
Yeah, but when 15% of the population votes,
yeah,
that frustration level where, well, I'm not going to vote, it doesn't matter. And then, and here we are, back worse than we were before.
Right.
What are some of the biggest issues you hear about when you go back home to Arizona? I know where I'm in Tennessee, and we're nowhere near the border, but it's the border. I mean,
yeah.
I hear that every day. Because I have, you know, I'm just last week I ran into a guy, and I knew him, and his son had OD'd, died on fentanyl, a little girl I knew in high school. Couple years younger than me, her son OD'd on fentanyl, you know, and it all just ties in. They say, can you not shut down that border?
Yeah, I would say that's the number one issue across the country, but especially in Arizona, because we are a border state.
Yeah.
And I would also say, you know, the weaponization of the federal government against American citizens. People are scared of what the government's becoming. They're scared of how big it's become. They're scared that they don't believe it represents them anymore, and as a matter of fact, it often targets them. And so I think those are a couple of the big issues. Election integrity is a really big issue in Arizona. That's not obviously, you know, I mean, really a federal issue, but that's a big deal to a lot of Arizonans.
Yeah, we get calls on that all the time. We're lucky in Tennessee. Our Secretary of State, I served with him, has got in Trey Hargett and some of his people he got in place are excellent, and we don't see those kind of issues there. I know you've been working on some stuff in Congress. I know one of them, you being a veteran, deals with veterans. Give us a little bit on that. What is that about?
Yeah, so I just came from the floor, Tim, before coming to your office, and we just passed a bill that takes some land from BLM and actually the Forest Service, and actually transfers it over to the county so that veterans in Northern Arizona can have a veterans retreat for their family. And when they come home from war, they can go there and recreate, and they can relax and spend time with their family. So it's pretty cool, because it's one of those that, you know, it's not costing the taxpayers any federal money. So that's pretty cool.
BLM is not Black Lives Matter. It's Bureau of Land Management.
Yes, sir.
Sometimes we get that mixed up, and I always have to catch myself when I'm speaking to a group.
That's right.
I'm sure they get it. And I thank you for that, because, you know, I talk about my daddy a lot. He was in intense combat as they had in the Pacific, you know, on those little islands. But he always told me a story about this one kid that come off the line on Peleliu, and he was just, you know, out of his mind. Maybe he had physically wasn't hurt, but his mental. And daddy said they just gave him a shot, and they sent him back on the troop ship and sent him home. That's probably the only counseling he got. And then, you know, these guys, one of the Navy corpsmen, the Indian fella, and his name escapes me, but that raised the flag, the famous picture of the Marines raising the flag on Mount Suribachi, and one of those, and he was a Navy guy, and he literally drank himself to death.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, daddy came home without any, I think he had a lot of guilt, because a lot of his buddies got killed. And he said, you know, so many times, you know, the Japanese were mortaring them, they got down in the foxholes, and a piece of metal hit his trench digger right here on his back, and it hit there, and he looked down, and he saw the metal, and it was still just, it was smoking hot still. I mean, that thing would have cut his head off. I mean, just, and it just, so many times he should have died, and he didn't, and then his buddies just walked out and got popped, you know, and he had that guilt. And I always tell the story that I never woke daddy up to the day he died over the top of him. I'd always grab him by his big toe. And, you know, his injuries, he went on, it was professional, and we had a great life. But, you know, I knew inside that, and I appreciate you doing that, because I just think that just some normalcy, just getting out with your family and fishing or going camping or something, these veterans groups that put those things together is excellent. So I hope that can be a model for the rest of the country.
That
is excellent.
No, it's awesome. We're excited about it.
Oh, you ought to be. I'm surprised you're such a thorn in the side for these idiots up here. Somebody hadn't tried to block it yet, but I dig that.
I know. Me too. it's one of the few areas, Tim, I've noticed that there's actually bipartisan support for as veterans, which is awesome. It's one area we, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, we all support. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Pretty rare up here, but.
Well, here's the part of the show that I hate the most. My guests tend to like. I allow you to ask me any question that you would like.
Okay. How long are you going to stay up here?
That's a good question. I don't know. I pray about it every day, where I need to be. And I love the fight. I don't like what it is. I mean, it's exactly, and people ask me what was my biggest surprise when I got up here, that I was not surprised. Because I'd spent 16 years in the state legislature and 8 years as a county mayor, and I know egos, and I know corruption, and I know, you know, all the things that ruin people, because I've seen buddies happen to them, committed suicide over some stupid thing they did in the legislature and couldn't tell somebody no or something, and I've been able to avoid all those pitfalls. And but I'm just kind of, it wears me out worrying about our country and where it's heading, and I miss stuff every day. I mean, multiple times I'm FaceTiming with my wife and my daughter and just keeping up with what's going on, and I'm not missing that much there, but it's that physical contact that I miss. And so I don't know. That's a good question.
I've got a couple more.
All right, give me a couple more. Go ahead. I might edit that one out.
How old is this jacket that you...
That's my latest. That's my Christmas Carhartt. I was on Fox one time, and I just had gotten it. It was like the first day of... First pair of jeans, first day of school. You know, you could just lean it up against the wall, and it would, you know, it was that crisp, I guess you could say. And it was one of the Fox, they you know, they'll get on your ear and say, "Congressman, you got 3 minutes and 20 seconds." And then I was watching the timer, and I think 1 minute and 20 seconds into it, the lady had asked me at the beginning, I think it was Maria Bartolomo, I think she, it was her, one of them. Anyway, they'd asked me, said, "Is that a new Carhartt?" And I said, "Ma'am, you can't hide money." And she started laughing. And she just kept laughing the whole time. And about halfway through my interview, she was still getting tickled, I think, over my question. But my wife bought me that one. She got tired of the old one. Yeah. And I've been wearing one of those for over 20 years. I like them. And as I used to say, they're cheap. They're just like made cheap. They're American made. They hold up under pressure, and they're cheap.
Boom.
But now they're not making them in America anymore, so I'm going to have to, I'm looking.
I got one more question.
All right.
So you're the only guy I know on the House, in the Congress, that has his own seat on the floor. Yeah. Why did you pick that seat?
I'm a creature of habit. I expect if somebody wanted to kill me, they just poison the hoagie on brown, no mayonnaise, just mustard, mozzarella cheese, or provolone cheese at Ball Market if they wanted to kill me. You know, so it's just a creature of habit. I call it Sinner's Row. If you notice, occasionally when people, I won't mention any names, but when people sit with me, they're usually occasionally in trouble, and I just like it.
Yeah, I remember you kicking me out of the seat one time, and
I
didn't want to mess with you because you had a Carhartt jacket.
Yeah, well, that's tough, you being a SEAL and all, me just being a low-life civilian, but anyway, thanks
for having me on the show, and thanks for
brother, it's a pleasure.
You're a fighter up here, dude.
Well, people talk about war heroes and stuff, and heroes, and we throw that around so much in America. You know, somebody can throw a football or catch a baseball or shoot a basket or something, or somebody that looks good and is an actor, and I've met a lot of them people, and honestly, they're not. If they were on your front porch, you'd probably go get your 12 gauge and say, "Man, y'all need to get off my dadgum porch." A lot of those people aren't that great of people. Some of them are really good, but, you know, and the guys that served our country, that's, I always say as a Christian, I owe y'all everything I have in my life but my salvation, because I lived a pretty good life. And my daddy, mama lost her brother fighting the Nazis, and mama flew an airplane during the war. I mean, you know, my wife is a Navy widow, and the biological father of my child is deceased. And so I owe a lot to the veterans. I complain a lot about it here, but, you know, it's not 120 degrees and
that's right.
And getting shot at.
That's right. Well,
not
thank
yet
you,
anyway.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. And I'm Congressman Tim Burchett, and this has been another episode of Tennessee Talks. And as always, thank y'all for seeing me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Tennessee Talks. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Keep up with Congressman Burchett by following Rep. Tim Burchett on Twitter and Instagram, and Congressman Tim Burchett on Facebook and YouTube.